tragic story this week, Newsman.
Tragic?
A really distressing story.
Should I mentally brace myself? Is this...
Get ready, because this is a sad tale. World-renowned model Emma Ratajkowski, I think that's how you say her name, has revealed a tragic part of her life, and that is that she gets denied work because her boobs are too big.
Wow, that's a really big problem for her.
Not fair. It's not fair.
Yeah, some people.
Yeah,
she's a victim.
She has it rough. She's poured her heart out to Harper's Bazaar magazine. She says, "There's this thing that happens to me. Oh, she's too sexy." This is what she tells the magazine. She goes on, "It's like an anti-woman thing that people don't want to work with me because my boobs are too big. What's wrong with boobs?" End quote.
I agree, but go on.
Now, this statement, it smacks to me of a humble brag.
A humble brag?
Yeah, there's this thing. It's primarily on Twitter. It's a phrase coined by a American comedy writer. He's not with us anymore, but he came up with the phrase humble brag to explain those little things people say, where we kind of phrase it as something that's, you know, bad that's happened to us, but actually the point of the whole comment is to really secretly highlight a great thing about us.
So you think you're listening about a hard luck story, but indeed it's about how she's got big boobs.
Yeah, that's what she's actually saying there is, hey, I've got big boobs. And so the definition of a humble brag is an ostensibly modest or self-deprecating statement whose actual purpose is to draw attention to something of which one is proud. So this just fits the bill, you know, to a T. Perfect. The thing about a humble brag is it's easier to know it when you see it, okay? There's a lot of famous examples. And this story is a great chance to expose some of these humble braggers, because, you know, they're all out there. Let's run through a few. And
please do.
To be honest, a lot of these are coming from America.
Oh, well, what a surprise.
They've perfected the art of humble brag. Here's one from this lady. She tweets, "I just stepped on gum. Who spits gum on a red carpet?" ? So, you know, the actual point is, hey, I'm walking on a red carpet.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, I love this. This is one of my favorite ones. This guy is Jerry Ferreira. I think maybe he's an actor. He has tweeted, "Just when you think you've made it, they butcher the spelling of your last name." So, you know, that seems like a reasonable gripe. Someone's misspelled his name.
Yeah.
But then attached to that comment is a photo of... you know how on movie sets you get your own chair with your name on it?
Yeah.
So his chair, Jerry Ferrara, misspelt, and he's taken a photo of it lined up next to Robert De Niro's chair. So actually the point of what you're saying, Jerry, is hey, I'm sitting next to Robert De Niro.
I'm rubbing shoulders with the best.
Mm-hmm.
But he throws a bit of humour about his surname. But
we're seeing through him, though. We see straight through it. I like this one from Martina Navratilova.
Good.
Tennis
Don't
legend.
Try it again.
No. Martina tweets, "Well done, Serena Williams. What a gutsy comeback in the third set. You are catching me and Chris, and I don't like it." So
congratulating, but just reminding people.
I've won more titles. I've won more titles. Yeah.
Me and Chris Evatt, we're the business.
Yeah. Emma Watson.
Emma Watson.
Made her name on Harry Potter.
Oh.
You don't want me to...
Nah, yes, yeah, spoiler.
She does seem like a nice lady, doesn't she? One of the better celebs, you'd think. But anyway, she's humble brag. She's tweeted, "It's been 10 years, but I still feel so uncomfortable with being recognised. Just a bit shy still, I suppose." So
yeah.
What she's letting everyone know there is, hey, I get recognised a lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jared Leto, actor, tweeted, "Just won GQ Style Award in Germany. Obviously, they made a mistake. I wonder how long till they come take it back." and he's added on hashtag, and the winner is Whoops. So, you know, he's couched it like, you know, an error's been made, but making sure everyone understands. He won that award.
He wanted to spread it. A bit of self-deprecation just to keep people on the level.
This guy tweets about his international travels. He says, it still amazes me that I can be in Prague, London, and the Paramus Whole Foods all in one day. Travel and technology boggle my mind. No, it's not about travel and technology. You just want to let everyone know all the places you've been. Exactly. Humble brag.
Yeah, I was trying to think of one, a humble brag for us, like whether it would be like one, and this is definitely about me, not you. But if you were to say tweet, news guy Marcus came up with a good idea for our podcast. And then something about, you know, because I've come up with the last 100. So you're pretending it's something about my idea, but let's face it, you're the ideas man of this show.
No, it's not. It's a team. It's a team effort. Can I share one last one?
Yeah,
with
please.
Because this is how you humble brag if you own a Lamborghini, okay? So you want to make sure everyone knows you have a Lamborghini, but it's a bit difficult to just come out and say it. So, Tila Tequila. Not sure. I should double check who she is. She might be a suspect character. Anyway, don't know who she is, but she tweeted this. I hate my Lambo. Police is always pulling me over just because it's a Lambo, so they always think I'm speeding, but I'm not. Then they let me go. All right, we get it. You have a Lamborghini.
Yes.
Humble brag.
Lambo twice. It's that time of year. Web guy, Tour de France. We all become cycling experts just for a couple of weeks as the world's best weave their way through some of the beautiful parts of France and other European cities. Mm-hmm. The big thing for Aussies this year is the change of the coverage. Famous commentator Phil Liggett, along with his longtime sidekick Paul Sherwin, have been bumped from the main commentary, the stage-to-stage commentary, for Robbie McEwen and Matthew Keenan.
Couple of blow-ins.
Obviously, Robbie, very famous for his cycling exploits.
Yep.
I had a listen to part of the coverage, and yeah, it definitely sounds different. It takes a while to get used to not hearing Phil Liggett's voice involved. He's been involved, I think, since the 90s. So he's been in it for a long, long time. And it's created a lot of online criticism for SBS. Why have you taken off this experienced pair?
Bit of blowback.
And it got me thinking, why do we get so wrapped up with the same when it comes to whether it's commentary or anything, really? We see it with the cricket as well, the Channel 9 commentators. It's taken a long time to transition from players from the 60s and 70s and 80s to more contemporary commentators. Part of it for me, the Tour de France, Phil Liggett's voice sounds, it feels like it's part of it. But listening to it, Robbie was saying the same stuff. They obviously have a list of, you know, this castle was owned by
factoids.
Yeah, pretty much like that. Yeah. They go through. Mm-hmm. He was saying the same things, but I just want to know why human nature is we can't let go of the old and embrace the new straight away.
Yeah, people don't like change. No one likes change. Some of us pretend we do, but no one does, really. Mm. You know, there's this thing where they say, anywhere where you regularly go to the same room, like in a uni lecture hall is a good example, almost everyone will go back to the first seat they sat in the first time. And then after that, you go back to the same one. It's a human trait, which is pretty big tangent from what you were just talking about.
But
Phil Liggett, the voice of cycling, that is what people called him. And imagine being the voice of something. Like, at that point, you are the doyen of a sport to be the voice of something. So he, year after year, you know, you just think cycling in Australia, or as Australian cycling fans, you think Phil Liggett. So to have lost the voice of cycling, I mean, massive, huge. You can't replace him just
but
like that.
I guess the other way to look at it is he is a commentator seat clogger. I mean, there's probably plenty of commentators out there that are just waiting for their chance.
Yeah, but you become the voice of something for a reason, and it's because you're pretty bloody good at what you're doing. Like, Who would be the voice of football in Australia?
I'm trying to think of that guy that does all the.
Oh yeah, he did, like Craig Willis does.
Craig
the
Willis, yeah.
This weekend on the foot. Anyway, yeah. He's got that ridiculous voice. But surely the voice of broadcast footy is Bruce McAvaney.
Yes, yep.
Because people have enjoyed his commentary. He's been doing it for a long time. He's honed his skill. He's good at it. People like it. And then at a certain point, yeah, sure, you become familiar with someone, and that's why we like to. You listen to Bruce commentate the game, and you feel like, you know, you're listening to your buddy commentate.
But
same with the
I feel like people think that Bruce has had a good stint at it, and if they said next year, look, we've got all these up-and-coming callers.
Mm.
Thanks for your time, Bruce.
Mm.
Go out in style. This is your last one.
Well, all I say is I'd hate to be the guy who's having to replace Bruce McAvaney, as you would hate to be the guy replacing Phil Liggett. But the way they do it is, you know, they bring in a team. So, you know, you don't replace McAvaney with a one-for-one. Like, you bring in, you know, a team of experts to fill a void like that. But, you know, it's inevitable, isn't it? Everyone has to give up at some point. Richie Beno was the voice of cricket in Australia forever.
Yeah, they sort of obviously passed away from illness, but they sort of eased him out of commentary. And they've done the same with Bill Laurie. I think last summer he was only sort of
mm-hmm.
Melbourne-based games, perhaps, or mm-hmm. just a couple of games a year, just to let you know he's still there, but he's not going to be full time.
Yeah, it's a nostalgia thing. We liked the thought of, you know, good old Richie calling the cricket. Sad now that, you know, it's the end of an era when he stops doing it, and maybe that's part of losing these a switch from the voice of some sport to the new one. It just reminds us all, okay, well, we've all aged a little bit more. A bit depressing. No such thing as a slow news day on the internet, newsman.
No, it's ever-changing and plenty of highlights.
Yep.
What's grabbed your interest today?
Well, there might not be slow news days, but there are less important news days because it's a big old internet out there. It's got to be filled up every day. So it's funny when these things happen, maybe there isn't a whole heap going on, and you see the same article get trotted out across multiple outlets. This one's been everywhere this week.
Is it one of those ones that you think websites having the holster just for this sort of day, where they think, yeah, that's a good one to release? Or
yeah, probably. Although, I mean, there is they're grasping at straws, but you could almost say it is newsworthy in one sense. It turns out that today, as we speak, it is Seinfeld's 28th birthday.
28th birthday.
Mm, so
he's looking old for 28. Nah, the show.
True.
Sorry, the show.
True. Yeah.
Well, how do they measure that? Because the show only went for what, 10, 11 years, basically since it first aired.
Yeah.
And that's how long it's been shown. Yeah.
Yeah, from when it first aired 28 years ago, first episode. So you know, that's big news story.
I'm hoping there's a few listeners to our podcast that are under the age of 25. Explain Seinfeld if someone's been living under a rock for the last 28 years.
Yeah, you would describe it as biggest comedian in the world gets his own TV show. I guess at the time Jerry Seinfeld was pretty much the main man. I think still is, really, still one of the biggest comedians going around. And they said, "Hey, you're a funny guy, make a TV show."
And one of the shows, part of the show, was it almost imitated life. They went to a TV producer and mm-hmm. almost tried to sell what Seinfeld is about, but within the show. And they said it's a show about nothing, basically. Yeah. It's probably one of those first sitcoms that didn't have to go on some wacky adventure. It was about life events and how people have different views on it, mm-hmm. and not everyone is. It's life is not always rosy.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are not always selfless.
Yeah.
So that's why I enjoyed it so much.
And one of the reasons they think that, or the experts say, it was such a success was because at a certain point, pretty early on, Jerry Seinfeld decided, you know, like, the show is named after him. He's playing himself on the show, but he kind of made the decision, I would rather make a good TV show than just, you know, a vehicle that I can use to promote myself. So he actually kind of took a bit of a backward step and really was by no means the star of the show, which is unthinkable when you think of other shows that comedians have done. But anyway, that's a bit of a sidetrack, because what we're looking at today, and I Let's try and make it interesting for anyone who's not a Seinfeld fan.
Nah, they'll be fans.
True. No such thing as a non-Seinfeld fan. In honor of their birthday, here are some things we never knew about the hit show.
Well, I'm looking forward to this because I'm a big fan. I've got the big box set, probably just past VHS. It's DVDs, but yeah, I've got the whole collection.
I know you are a fan, so I'm looking forward to hitting you with these. Off the top, Jason Alexander, famously played George Costanza, probably the funniest character on the show, a favourite of everyone's. Jason Alexander was not first choice to play that character.
All right, so who was?
Baffling choice. To look back on it, baffling choice or baffling decision to initially offer the role to David Letterman's musical sidekick, Paul Schaefer.
Well, they got the same characteristics.
They're both bald.
Stocky bald men.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul Schaefer's very much a bubbly, positive guy, whereas the character George is very much selfish, negative, all about himself and what he can get out of life.
Yeah, and looking and after how Jason Alexander just made that character his own, it's unfair really now to look back on it, and because you can't imagine anyone else playing it. But Schaefer, like, weird one to me. Apparently Seinfeld left a voicemail on Paul Schaefer's telephone answering machine, because this would have been the very late 80s, early 90s, saying, oh, we're going to do a show, you can do this role, call me back. Never called him back.
Ooh.
Now, another interesting thing. Everyone knows the famous theme song. Boom, ba-dum, boom, 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 blah, blah, blah.
I wish people could see the hand motions there. Playing the bass.
Bit of
air bass.
Slapping the bass. The composer rewrote that theme song for every single episode.
Please explain.
All right, because it sort of would work around the opening scene would be Jerry usually doing some a routine at a comedy club.
Mm.
And it was always like a bit of a, it was always a different routine that went for a different amount of time. And, you know, depending on where the jokes were and the beats, as they say, he needed to write the intro theme around that opening monologue. So it changed every week.
Okay. Well, that's pretty... that's a lot of intensive work for so many episodes.
What a hassle. Major hassle. Maybe that's why they finally quit doing the show.
bass player got really tired.
Yeah, carpal tunnel. interesting. There was an episode that was developed, completely developed and produced, but then it was scrapped, never went to air. It involved Jerry purchasing a handgun.
Well, I can see why that didn't go air. That just doesn't sound Seinfeldy, but I guess it's the hilarity of what would come with a funny non-combative sort of guy owning a weapon.
Yeah, this leads into another thing we never knew, and you alluded to it. It became known as the show about nothing. Now, did you know that you know, tag that the show got irritated the people who created it? Here's the quote. This is one of the writers said that tag, it created a kind of misnomer about the show. Because if you look at it, the show actually addressed a whole heap of things, including, you know, handguns, even though they didn't use that episode. Mm. But, you know, all kinds of taboo subject after taboo subject. They talked about everything. So the opposite of nothing. It was actually about everything, but, you know, done in a way that we'd never seen before, maybe.
Can you think of any of the issues, any that come to
all
mind?
All right, this writer said, talking about the show about nothing was a misnomer. Quote, I mean, it was the only show on TV that wasn't about nothing. Seinfeld was taking on issue after issue and not even consciously, just because, you know, Elaine was dating a guy who's anti-abortion was one example.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of...
There's a lot of... Jew references and
I
remember Jerry made out with a date on while watching Schindler's List.
Yep.
That's probably not, but it sort of discussed the seriousness of that. I think they got caught in the back of a limo with some Nazis, I think.
Yeah. And the famous Master of Your Domain episode as well. Not many shows. Well, I cannot think of any other show that's ever gone there.
Glad you went there and went with that title.
Mm. Next point. The only line that Jerry Seinfeld will ever quote from the show. There's only one he likes to repeat.
St. Newman. Hello, Newman.
No, it's not that one. It's not even, it wasn't even uttered by an actual known character. Apparently there was an episode where George was working somewhere new and all his new colleagues were eating some like an apple pie or something, and George was hesitant to eat it. He didn't really want to. And his new boss says, "If you're one of us, you'll take a bite." And apparently that was Jerry's favourite line, bit obscure. Now when his kids, you know, don't want to eat their veggies or something, he'll tell them, "If you're one of us, you'll take a bite."
I think the episode was he had a run-in with the chef, not knowing he was a chef, and then he meets with these people, thinks he's got a finally made a career break, and sees the chef sort of watching them evil with an evil look in his face as they're about to get stuck into the pie. So that's
okay. All right. I love that you knew exactly what I was talking about.
I'm sad.
All right. Last couple. Now, a big plot point in this series was when George Costanza's fiance died.
Susan.
Yeah. Now, that actually, the story goes, and Jason Alexander said it on a radio show in the US, that character was intentionally killed off because they just hated working with the actor who was playing the role.
Oh, okay. She appears in the behind the scenes clips, like they interview her, but never probably with the cast. So whether
conspiracy.
So yeah, they didn't like it. Kill her off.
Apparently, it was a production meeting between the stars and the lady who played Elaine, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
They were having a bit of a whinge about the actor, and she said something like, "Don't you just want to kill her?" And apparently, Larry David went, "Ding, light bulb moment, excellent idea." And that's exactly what they did in the show, I should stress, not in real life. Now, wrap it up. It was a emotional moment when the season, or the series, rather, ended. Mm. Everyone wanted them to keep making it, but Jerry decided, no, pulling the pin.
Get out on top.
Go out on top. Offered millions and millions to keep doing it. Didn't want to do it. Big moment when they wrapped up the whole show. And Jerry Seinfeld gave every cast member a gift after the last episode. He gave them all a Cartier watch that had Seinfeld engraved into it on the bottom.
Hmm. Do you wear that around?
Oh, absolutely, I would wear that. Well, Cartier, I don't know. Maybe it's a bit flashy, but you would...
Probably the guys would... I don't know if the girls would love that, but...
Maybe he did a his and hers version. Because for him, I mean, he would have just found the money for those watches just in his ashtray.
Web guy, thanks for letting me get my geek on as usual about things I didn't know about Seinfeld. So thanks.
Serenity now. Newsman, we like to keep up with all the latest trends that are happening.
Indeed.
We've covered a few before. Fubbing, we learned about a little while ago when that was in the news.
Yes, I've learnt my lesson. It's about fubbing.
Mm-hmm. Also, there was a news story. You educated me about the Belfie.
Belfie? What's that one? I can't even remember.
I think it was selfies of your butt.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Story out now teaching us about a new type of traveller called the Honey Boomer.
I think most people just enjoy making up names for these, but go on. I love this.
It's a pretty good name, Honey Boomer. I guess it's a mashup of going on a honeymoon, but being a baby boomer.
Okay.
You know, the age of, you know, what age is a baby boomer? It's kind of like our parents, sort of.
Mm. Yep.
Which would be, what, 50 plus through to 70, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say that'd be about right.
So I don't think you have to fall into that age range to be a honey boomer. What defines you as a honey boomer is deciding to leave your kids at home while you go on holiday.
Mm.
So big growth area in the travel industry, apparently. Couples who holiday without the kids have become the growth in this category has become so strong they've got their own name, honey boomers. They seek to enjoy time alone, to work on their relationship while the kids stay home. Not sure where I sit on this one.
I I think you're going to correct me with your superior knowledge of parenting, but I don't mind it. I think it's a good idea from a different point of view, though, and that's financial. If you were heading off on holiday, depending on how old your kids are, do they have memories of anything under the age of five, or is it all sort of stuff that's that sort of develops their brain, but they don't actually remember? So why spend money on food and accommodation for someone who doesn't remember the experience?
It's just not going to remember it. Fair point. But, I mean, everyone's taking so many photos and videos of holidays these days. Surely down the track, the kids are going to be looking back through the archives and thinking, hang on, I don't remember.
Facebook archives.
Yeah. I don't remember the holiday when we went to France. Oh, well, that's because we didn't take you. It's going to... We're not going to get away with it.
Okay. Fair enough, but it would save a bit of money, wouldn't it? But this is more about relationship, one-on-one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look, the reason this is in the news is because there's an 80% growth in the last 4 years of couples leaving their kids behind when they go travelling. So I get what you're saying about cost, obviously. And I mean, if you're parents of twins, you probably have a different take than just a single child. Which is our situations, but what about the family holiday? Is it too much to say this is the death of the family holiday? Clark Griswold, probably no one even know who Clark Griswold is anymore, because the idea of taking the kids away on a trip, just totally foreign.
The other thing I guess you miss out on, or I've spoken to my brother who has two young boys, and I used to sort of question him, like, oh, you're taking them to Fiji, you're taking them to Bali, you know, do they remember everything?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was generally they'd remember, like, there was a funny shaped bin in the passageway, but they wouldn't remember, you know, going to an expensive water park or something. But he said, we want to take them. They're part of our lives. We love being around them. So that was the argument that stuck with me.
Yeah, I feel like that's where I sit as well. I think you don't want to leave the kids behind. I mean, funny shaped bin, like I've seen lots of funny shaped bins that are memorable. I don't think, although,
no, what I'm saying though is they're memories of what should be appreciated. They're just seeing a poster on the wall and going, oh, I remember.
I know.
There's a Simpsons poster on the wall.
You want to say to the kids, you're remembering the wrong parts. But if they're typical kids, then probably what they're really remembering is all the bits that go wrong. Like every time dad loses his temper. That's the bit they'll remember. I like your brother's take. I think, you know, you decided to have a family. Like, you know, that's, you've got a family now. You don't just pick and choose when you have a family. Like, when you go on
holidays. I knew your superior parenting would come out in the end. But.
Although, let's clarify. I think we have to mention something here. The couple interviewed in this particular story have specified that they didn't start leaving their kids behind until the youngest was 18.
Well, the kids would be celebrating, wouldn't they?
So they're really adults by that stage. And I do feel like, well, 18 still sounds pretty young. I would be hoping maybe our kid would still want to come away when he's 18. But much past that, yeah, well, probably not. But much past that, then I start to feel like once a kid's in their 20s, then, yeah, I mean, they're really independent, like fully on their own at that stage, have their own lives.
I've just had a flashback to when my parents left myself and my brother and sister at home while they went on a holiday.
Right.
And we actually stayed with our grandma who lives in the Barossa Valley, and she was a lovely lady, but of the old school, sort of stern, no-nonsense.
Uh-huh.
So we were very appreciative to see our parents after, it was probably only a week or so, but
the
strict discipline of grandma's rule.
A parenting tactic to go away, come back and have your kids actually look forward to seeing you. Do you know, just thinking about it now, I reckon this has been done to me. I reckon I've been hoodwinked as a child. And maybe this is how you sell it, that it's not your parents going away on a holiday, it's they have to go on a work trip. So maybe your mum or dad has to go on a work trip and the other one goes along with them as well. I don't know. That's what I was told, personally speaking. I'm not sure what their explanation was why both had to go, but they both go on the work trip. And sure, there's a bit of work, but I think, you know, that might be a cover. Like, it might actually be more holiday than work, looking back on it.
I think you should bring that up next time you see mum and dad web guy and could change your views on parenting altogether.
Yeah, I've got to mention this one to the therapist first, probably. Joke, just a joke.
Tim, a bit of a painful story from the US. We hear a lot of very tragic stories about gun ownership and the abuse of weapons in the US. But a story coming from Florida, a man had to be taken to hospital after getting into his car and sitting on his gun and injuring his penis.
Well, yeah, I mean, you carry a gun, the stakes are raised at that point. You carry a gun, then things are serious. Not often, though, you expect that you will shoot yourself with the gun. And even less common that you would shoot yourself with your own gun right in the crotch.
I know, given the positioning of what we're talking about here, must have been a... It's very lucky or unlucky just to hit that particular organ.
Yeah, so he got in his car. This is a story around that a man in Florida jumped in his car, sat on his gun, it went off and shot himself right in the genitals. So, you're saying he's lucky?
Well, he could be dead.
I guess
lucky's not the right word, but compared to other stories of, you know, people opening fire on others, this is just a story of, well, carelessness of what gun ownership can happen.
Yeah, disappointing result for him, though.
Sorry, I went off half-cocked with that one.
you got a list of puns written down there that you're just going to work your way through during this segment. He just burst into a stranger's home. He was in such a state after this happened, burst into a stranger's house, kind of demanded that they take him to the hospital, and they did. So he's going to be okay, except for the fact that it sounds like there's now a pretty good chance he's going to go to prison. You know, talk about a bad day getting worse. He doesn't have the right license for the gun, so, you know, there's a chance he'll do some time in jail, which is really just the cream on the very painful top of this story. I guess maybe there's a serious point, though, about gun laws, that you know, you carry the weapon, and they always say there's a chance. I mean, people carry it presumably because they feel like it makes them safer. Always a chance, though, once you're carrying it, it's going to be used against you. You may not accidentally discharge it yourself. You know, if you decide to whip it out in a bad situation... The gun, that is, I mean, then you know, it might get turned on you. It just feels like this is another story. Put this in the column of maybe another reason why guns are not a great idea.
I don't know about the US laws. Do you need, obviously in Australia, you need to have it stored away. I doubt you could just have it in your car, but I suppose, I guess in the US it's a
safe to say it is different in the US.
Yeah.
I think. But still, you have to have the right permits, and obviously he didn't. But yeah, I think depending on what license you have and what gun you have, yeah, you can. You know, they just walk around with these things on their belts.
If anyone needed a deterrent from using a weapon in the US, maybe sort of a you couldn't put a picture up of what's happened, but.
Well, you could just, if you could get the, if you get a photo of the facial expression that guy pulled at the moment of, you know, the incident. Even that would be a poster. There's a poster right there. Kids, don't do guns.